On Masters of Scale, we talk a lot about inflection points, those moments when a technology stops being optional and starts being fundamental. AI presents one of those moments, and behind every breakthrough, whether it's medical research or education or even cinematic visual effects, there's infrastructure most people never see. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is building that foundation. It provides a purpose-built AI cloud designed specifically for pioneers at leading AI labs and enterprises, ready to power the biggest ideas and the boldest ambitions. Ready for anything, ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/ready for anything.
Startups grow in unpredictable ways, but your infrastructure shouldn't. Deel scales with you from employee one to employee 1,000. Deel's real-time payroll engine cuts weeks-long cycles down to minutes, and their global experts keep you compliant as you expand. Plus, startups can tap into perks like up to $25,000 in Deel credits and support programs designed specifically for high-growth teams. Deel is the fastest way to hire, manage, pay, and equip anyone, anywhere. Deel, your forever people platform. Visit deel.com/MOS to learn more and book a demo.
We humans, we've been building in the last post-World War II a good world. A good world that in America is full of imperfections and that we need to work together to fix them. Of course, but you don't fix them burning everything down. You fix them by coming together to the table, realizing that problems never will be solved by finger pointing. Problems will always be solved sitting down in the table and coming together in how we find common ground. That's the way we build good intent, good empathy, good policy, that then becomes good politics because it's on behalf of all Americans. That's the way we should be doing it. So that's why, in a way, I'm hopeful.
That's Jose Andres, chef, restaurateur, author, and founder of World Central Kitchen. Jose has a new book out, Change the Recipe, filled with lessons from Jose's life in the kitchen that can be applied to leadership and everyday life. We use the book as a jumping-off point to discuss everything from what rules are worth breaking to the benefits of unplugging to why everyone has the potential, in Jose's words, to be superhuman. We also cover the ongoing hurdles that World Central Kitchen faces in multiple war zones around the world, the messy state of Trump's tariffs, and more. Above it all, Jose's enduring optimism shines through. I don't know about you, but I need to hear some of that right now, so let's dive in. I'm Bob Safian, and this is Rapid Response. I'm Bob Safian. I'm here with Jose Andres, renowned chef and restaurateur, TV host, author, father, husband, and founder of World Central Kitchen. Jose, it's great to see you again. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be back, Bob.
Yeah. So you have a new book out called Change the Recipe.
Yes.
It is not a cookbook. It's a book about building a better world, or as the subtitle puts it, you can't build a better world without breaking some eggs. The book's filled with personal stories and advice. Why this book? Why now?
Well, I don't even think it's a book. It's few thoughts, a few ideas of my life since I was a little boy. All the way until now, and things I learned, I learned from the right decision, things we learn maybe from the wrong decision, but that they help you to become better. Random stories that I wanted to share with my daughters. I wanted to share with anybody maybe interested in finding maybe, you know, answers to problems they face themselves.
There's this theme in it that lessons from the kitchen are kind of applicable everywhere, you know, from the boardroom to everyday life, right? That's been your experience?
Cooking for me has never been a job. It's been something I enjoy. since I was a young boy going to work early in the morning to the kitchens, I remember I would get there early because for me, arriving to the kitchen early before anybody else got there was so special. Used to see a kitchen come to life every single morning. Mm. From the moment you got there, like looking like a cave, dark. From the moment you turn on the first lights, that you turn the ovens and everything began getting warmer and then everybody began arriving.
It's like every day is spring, things coming up.
So I spent a lot of time obviously in kitchens and not only in professional kitchens, but also in the kitchen in my house. And I realized that there's a lot of moments and lessons that even at the time were not maybe meaningful to me because I was young or there are stories that kind of stay with me in my memory line of the past. And all of a sudden, as I was growing up, I began giving them, making sense of the moment. Even reimagining what my father wanted to tell me when he told me, you need to control the fire. Sometimes I kind of romanticize the moment. Maybe his words in his brain were not so deep. He only was telling me, control the fire or you cannot cook, literally. But then I began trying to imagine that maybe behind the words of wisdom were deeper and deeper and deeper stories. Mm.
And what does the phrase mind the fire mean to you now?
Well, you know, this came out of a story is me helping my dad. I will help my mama in the kitchen. Everybody in my house helped in the kitchen. My three brothers, myself, my father. But my mom was Monday through Friday. My father was more the weekend cook when more people probably will arrive. Gatherings we will do in a near forest or in a park. And my father will cook very often the big pot, the big paella, and I will be always in charge of the fire. And one day I got upset because I wanted to do the cooking. I wanted to cook with him. I don't even remember the sad age, but happened anywhere between my 11, 12, 13 years old. And my father didn't let me do the cooking because it was a very big one. The fire required a lot of support. And no, I need you to concentrate on the fire. I got upset. He sent me away. And then my father told me, you must control the fire. If you don't learn how to control the fire, it's not cooking you can do. For a cook, a young cook in the making, controlling the fire is everything. Mm. I think we all need to find our fire. Mm. We need to control it. We need to master it. Mm. And then in a way, you can do anything you want with your life. You can do any cooking you want with your life. Mm. So I think we are all in this search, obviously, that what is our fire? What keeps us going? And are we able to master that so we can achieve anything we want? Mm. In a way, this is the story of controlling the fire.
I was curious, as a cook, you think about individual dishes and you think about the meal, how it all comes together. And I'm wondering, in your other businesses at World Central Kitchen, all your ventures, like how do you balance the focus between dishes and meals, you know, between projects and mission? Or are they not separate for you?
Well, I'm 55 and I'm still a little bit confused of what my role in life is.
Like the rest of us.
And I think it's okay because if you recognize you are confused sometimes, you keep searching. Maybe it's one of the reasons I turn everybody crazy around me because I try to do so many things. Mm. But it's not the number of things I do. It's how diversified the world is in the amount of things you want to be part of. Because I think it's good that you are involved. By being involved doesn't make you an expert, but at the very least, you're learning in real time with boots on the ground what happens. Mm. When I was a younger cook and I began being the chef of my restaurant and then partner and owner of my own restaurant company, I wish I knew more about business back then. I didn't go to business school. But then applies to everything else. I am a cook that feeds the few. I always had the interest to be part of feeding the many. We all have a talent within us that goes beyond what we think of ourselves. Mm-hmm. In a way, I think everybody is a superhuman. They need to believe it. Mm. and they need to see the talents they have. And even talents they have and they don't pride themselves for it can be a very powerful tool for them to make people around them even better. So it's okay to move away from my business domain and become volunteering in a local soup kitchen, which is also food and it's also business in a way. The business of giving opportunity to people that had none. In the process, they become cooks. Like when I began joining This Is Central Kitchen, which is my favorite NGO in America, that they do something as simple as giving people the chance to belong, training them to be cooks, feeding the homeless population, fighting food waste. Oh my God. It's like we need more of this type of NGO that they have the mentality of a for profit. In the process of all of that, uniting the dots, I become better at understanding what are the solutions to the problems we face versus blaming and finger pointing to everybody for everything is wrong. Is involving yourself in everyday life that surrounds you to make obviously your business or your workplace better, to make your street better, to make your neighborhood better, obviously your family, your friends. In the process, everybody contributing. In order to do that, we don't have to do it, but I see that everybody has that feeling of doing something, being the coach on your children's game. That's an amazing way to create. It's a lot of ways everybody contributes. Only we need to make sure that all of that is multiplied in such a ways that then the problems stop being problems and become amazing opportunities to keep moving forward.
Your fire is as a cook, but as you talk about all this, I mean, you've got fire as a business person, as someone who's trying to sort of use levers to amplify, even though you may not define yourself that way.
Well, probably one of the, my company is in a good moment. Still, we are not out of the water completely after COVID. Many, many companies in America, especially in the area I know a little bit more, which is the restaurant company, we went through a lot of hardships, and you keep looking at the future to make sure that the decisions you keep making today, you make them learning from decisions maybe you made in the past and then you regret you made them before COVID came, for example. So it's all always learning, and that's what I keep doing every day of my life.
Along with the book, you also have a new TV show premiering shortly called Yes, Chef. Right? Co-host is Martha Stewart. It sounds like you two had fun together.
Well, Martha is an amazing human being. My God, he's like so full of energy, so full of wisdom.
And was it fun?
Oh, it was very fun. And I put my phone away and dedicated myself used to do the show and have time to meet the people. That sometimes I'm realizing that I'm not even having the time to do it right now, even with my restaurants, because it becomes a very big mountain of more people you have to meet, more people, which is necessary. But this one moment, you are only one person. And I realized, and especially this last year, everything is very overwhelmed. So for me, doing the show was a way used to say, I'm going to do the show and I'm going to have fun. And I tried to meet every one of the cameramen. We shot in Toronto, amazing people. And I met everybody I could, and we played darts, and I kind of went two, three times to amazing restaurants in Toronto. I cook a lot at home because it was cold and snowy every day and was raccoons all over the house. And I love that, all of that. But this long story was to tell you that I really enjoyed the moment. But the message what I realized is that sometimes in the last few years, I've been in the grumpy side more times than I like. And I realized that has a lot to do with being overwhelmed sometimes, pressure on your shoulders of a lot of things you are leading. That is not the fault of anyone. They are all mine because I'm the one that gets into so many things that maybe I don't have to get into so many things. Even I have great people that manage them. I'm only just very lucky that when I open my mouth, things happen or they start happening. But I realized that sometimes you used to breathe in, breathe out, do one thing and put everything you got into the one thing allows you to fulfill and enjoy the moment so much more than when you keep always trying to do 100 things at once. And this is the big learning from this show. So yeah, I hope the show will do great. I got to know Martha even more. I think we are now you need to ask her, but I think even more friends. We keep texting each other now. Was a very, very, very special, very emotional, because it's real people, real 12 chefs that they're going through their own life issues and restaurant issues. And they go into this competition that is a competition, but it's $250,000 on the line. And in the process, they need to fulfill who they are as a chef, as a person, as a mother, as a father, as a boyfriend. Wow. All these things are going to be part of the show. So yeah, NBC, 28th of April, 10 p.m. After The Boys, 10 episodes. Yes, chef.
When we last talked, it was probably 2+ years ago for this show, and you were focused on Ukraine. It was 6 months after Russia invaded Ukraine. You World Central Kitchen was feeding millions of people. You just come back from talking to Zelensky. You were kind of struggling to maintain balance in your life. You know, you felt sort of this weight of others' troubles on you. Do you feel any lighter today?
No. The last 2 years and a half, if anything, they've been more brutal, right? You know, it's been more than a year. I didn't go back to Ukraine now, but again, one thing is World Central Kitchen, another thing is Jose Andres. And it's a good thing, even obviously I'm very involved with World Central Kitchen. In the last days, we've been able to be delivering 60, I don't know, up to 100 we're trying to do, but big generators, because many of the rural farmers, and especially cow milk producers, were in lack of electricity. All the electricity grid has been damaged enormously. It's many parts that they have zero electricity, and probably it'll be years before they repair it. We've been able to deliver those massive generators that will simplify the lives of milk producers. We're doing other things of that sort. We built a kitchen in the north, in Chernihiv, and so we helped build one kitchen that is feeding, I don't know, up to 10 schools out of that central kitchen. Not close to the front lines, but close enough. I've been supporting an organization that is trying to bring the thousands and thousands of Ukrainian children that they've been taken by Russia. And obviously the efforts of World Central Kitchen, we are not doing the numbers we used to do, but with over 300 million meals we had, without a doubt, we were the biggest humanitarian organization in Ukraine, especially the first year and a half. We took over in the first year in ways nobody else was able to do. But it's not good or bad. It's the space we occupy. We are the quick, faster, and we can become very massive if we get the support of the people. Myself personally, as one more volunteer, I've been in Ukraine. I was in Turkey, in Syria on the huge earthquake. Everybody told me you shouldn't go to Syria, and probably I was supposed to listen, but it was important for me that I saw with boots on the ground what was going on in Syria. We were able to put a lot of hundreds of thousands of meals every single day to help the people in northern Syria that, between a war, they're forgotten. Imagine, worst of the worst, when you already were in a hole even deeper. Mm. So for me, it was important we were there, and there we were. I've been in other scenarios. I was in Asheville, in North Carolina, in the mountains every day in a helicopter, joining World Central Kitchen team and delivering food. I was the same in Valencia, where more than 230 people also died in a big flooding that nobody saw coming, where thousands and thousands of homes disappear, tens of thousands, of businesses were underwater. And I went there too, because obviously it's the country I come from, and I had to be there. Even moments I say, I don't want to do it anymore. I don't have to. I've been doing this 15 years now, and it's a volunteer job. That's a mother, but I have a hard time staying away. I went Gaza, I went Lebanon, I went Egypt, I went Israel. This last year has been hard, the last almost 2 years. So you mentioned, you know, is any more weight? Well, I mean, we began feeding in Israel when Israel was attacked by Hamas. At the same time, we were in Gaza because we had to be in Gaza. Obviously, Gaza became much more massive for us. We reached close to 500,000 meals a day. We opened almost, we helped support almost 196 kitchens, which was the right thing to do. Mm. Putting aside the wars, putting aside the invasions, putting aside. And that's what I've been doing, making sure that at least food gives opportunity and hope to people.
Yeah.
This all comes with weight. Obviously, this last year, we lost 7 members of Wilson Drug Kitchen in a strike by the IDF. And obviously, we're trying to still search for answers. Even we got some answers, but still, you want more answers on behalf of everybody. And with a very simple idea that, you know, the future of anybody that is fighting with each other is used to live in peace. Can be Russians with Ukrainians, Israelis and Palestinians. It's the same questions from a lot of people. Mm. Why? You hear people from Israel that wanted to go to help fit in Palestine, people in Palestine that wanted to go help fit in Israel. I believe it's the silenced majority that usually want goodness, that wants to live in peace. And that's what I obviously try to do personally, building longer tables, seeing people that maybe they were not meant to know each other or that they seem they are at odds with each other, to see that there's much more humanity within every one of them. And that the vast majority of the people, I put my hand on the fire, that's what they want. What is good for me must be good for you too.
Jose's openness to varied communities runs counter to the what's in it for me vibe these days. So how can turning to others help us thrive as individuals, businesses, and countries, especially in a time of increasing volatility? We'll talk about that and more after the break. Stay with us.
Hey folks, Jeff Berman here. Exciting news. Applications are now open for the Masters of Scale Summit. It's happening October 20th through October 22nd in San Francisco, and it is a really special event. Please join our curated community of founders, innovators, and leaders shaping the future. Expect ideas that challenge your assumptions and connections that move your business and maybe even your life forward. It's an experience that can change literally everything. Apply now at mastersofscale.com/apply26. That's mastersofscale.com/apply26.
While everyone was debating whether or not Bitcoin was an asset for their portfolio, CoinShares was quietly building the foundation to invest in it properly. CoinShares launched the world's first Bitcoin ETP back in 2015. Today, they manage nearly $6 billion and are profitable through multiple market cycles. CoinShares is publicly traded on NASDAQ Stockholm and announced in September it is seeking a U.S. listing. CoinShares is the one-stop shop for digital asset investment, passive ETFs, active strategies, and mining exposure. Every approach built to institutional standards. CoinShares. The adults have arrived. Learn more at coinshares.com.
AI breakthroughs are quickly reshaping every industry around the world. Healthcare, education, science, entertainment, and beyond. But true global scale only happens when the underlying infrastructure can maintain pace with the rapid speed of innovation. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is a purpose-built cloud made for the real demands of today's most complex AI models, bringing the pace, performance, and partnership leading pioneers need to continue pushing boundaries. Ready for anything? Ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/readyforanything.
Before the break, chef and World Central Kitchen founder Jose Andres previewed his new book, Change the Recipe, and talked about why longer tables, not higher walls, are critical to solving the world's biggest problems. Now he shares lessons about what rules are worth breaking, where he finds hope in the face of crisis, and more. Let's jump back in.
One of the book's key themes is adaptability. Right. Yeah. And for many people, especially today, very volatile, there can be panic, there can be paralysis. How do you center yourself in those moments? And how much do you think adaptability is about sort of temperament versus something we can learn?
I think the human DNA of who we are a species that we are highly adaptable. we are not adaptable with our bodies, meaning evolution happens over hundreds of thousands, millions of years, but our brain can, and our heart can. Hmm. Our heart in ways of things that you didn't care forever, that didn't make you a bad person. But once you find out something, it's like your heart adapts. And we change.
You talk in the book about breaking rules and that you need to break rules to make progress.
Yeah. Obviously, that one can be used in many ways.
Yeah.
Because you could argue that our rules breaking being broken right now in our government.
I want to ask you, because you're in favor of rule breaking sometimes to get certain things done.
But let me tell you what rule breaking.
What are different kinds of rules?
Let me tell you what rule breaking. It's like when you show up somewhere and somebody comes and tells you that you are not needed here. Mm. And you're looking around and you are only seeing hunger, destruction. I'm sorry, but, you know, I want to be respectful. But if I see that there's need, we're going to stay here because our mission is not going to be following your guidance. It's going to be following what the people are telling us. Mm-hmm. And so this is a way of breaking rules. We were told sometimes in some hurricanes in America that some schools, we couldn't use the kitchens. And the school kitchen was the best kitchen in many kilometers around and was complicated to navigate through roads and destruction. And even we were told we couldn't use that kitchen. We used that kitchen. We got in trouble. Mm-hmm. We got in trouble until, you're feeding 2,000 people every day? I think that's a rule that I will not even not mind to pay a penalty or even be sent jail.
Right, you're okay if you pay a penalty for breaking those rules because the goal is important enough.
That's what these breaking the rules means. Sometimes the rules are in your own brain. Mm. It's breaking the chains of the own rules that you set on your own that don't allow you to do the extra step to make something happen. Mm.
Sometimes the rules then, they're not really rules. You've just taken them as rules. Mm. I want to ask you, there's something else you write about in the book, the difference between thinking like software and thinking like hardware.
Yeah.
Can you explain that is?
Obviously, this is a one that in emergencies I learned a long time ago. Very often in emergencies, you can hear presidents. We are positioning military or helicopters or boats or foot or MREs or water or ambulances. Mm. Okay. All of that is hardware. The hardware are tools, things that will allow you to have a good response. Everybody's going to be working on bringing the hardware to ground zero. Mm. A week later, 2 weeks later, you're still in the business of being a transportation company that you are trying to move hardware from point A to ground zero. All of a sudden, you forgot who you were. Who you were. A feeding organization. Mm. Software will allow you to respond to your main mission, which is feeding people on day one. What software is? What do you have around to feed people? Mm-hmm. What is at your finger points today? Ain't going to be perfect. Ain't going to be pretty. You're not going to have logos. It's not going to be the perfect, clean basket, container to go. Maybe tamales in a banana leaf. Because it's the only thing we have. We don't even have forks or knives. That allows you to give to somebody a piece of food that actually you can be holding in your hands and you are feeding day one in the heart of Puerto Rico. With nothing. So that's the hardware versus software. Never forget your mission. Never forget what you're there for. For any organization, every organization has to be having very clearly what your mission is to the most simplistic, smaller phrase possible, and never let anybody forget that. If not, your mission becomes something else. Concentrating on the software will always allow you to be faster and quicker.
As you're talking about technology, I recently did an episode with Mark Lorry, the founder of Wonder.
Mark Lorry, yeah.
Yes, you know, the food delivery app. I know you've collaborated with Wonder. And Mark talked about how he uses AI to pick all of his meals, like every meal. And he thinks it's one day everybody's going to do that. And you're even going to use it as at a restaurant to pick your meals for you. Has he talked to you about this? Have you tried it? Do you think this is a good thing?
Anything Mark says, I will support, because Mark is one of those amazing brains. Obviously, he's working on, you know, taxis that will lift up in the middle of the cities, planes that will fly us away. I think you bought the Minnesota, the Timberlowers,
yes.
And so many other things. And obviously, Wonder, I know very well. I'm on their board. The big thing for me and AI is when I tell AI, what are the food problems and food solutions that American planet Earth? And AI right now at the best can do is giving you a very good glimpse of all the different situations food is a problem and can be a solution. Mm. And it's things people don't even imagine. But food is everything. Food is national security, food is defense, food is immigration, food is science, food is health, food is the economy. Food is very much in everything, and we don't even realize. We only have food in planet Earth for around 6-7 weeks, no more. I think the number is at the most 90 days. It's the total food that we have stored to feed the 8 billion people on planet Earth. If a major thing will happen at once, and it's been glimpses in the past that we had, back-to-back hurricanes in high productive food areas of America, Central America, tornadoes, droughts, pests, wiping out food production, wiping out cattle, wiping out eggs, wiping out chickens. Imagine if the perfect storm happens. We have enough food to eat in planet Earth. Why we are not finding the way to make sure that those people that are really poor, we distribute that excess of food through better distribution, etc. That's the problem now. We have enough, but not everybody is receiving the food. And we should be solving this problem. I believe it's highly solvable. But we have another problem that is brewing in the back. And I don't think anybody is giving enough attention. That's why I'm asking for a national food security advisor to the president. What happens if one day we wake up and we say, today is not enough food to feed America? These are the problems that I hope AI will come up with. So obviously, if Mark is saying, this is the way, I will listen to Mark, because we need more brains like Mark solving problems. And it doesn't seem we have the people or the experts concentrated in what can become potentially a very big problem not too far away from today. Mm.
So I want to ask you one last question. Are you optimistic today about America?
I am optimistic in the way that in life, humans, we learn how to adapt, and we seem sometimes we learn the lessons, even it seems we only learn them short term and we have a short memory. And then we need to go back to the mistakes of the past to remind ourselves that this other is always a better way. The last issues with tariff happened, over 100 years ago? And I guess nobody is alive that went through the great pains that those tariffs created. Therefore, sometimes you have to go through problems to remind every human how good our life is, how much we have to work to keep improving what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, I'm asking everybody, go out right now. Walk in your cities, walk in the countryside. Take a look at the trees with the flowers and the butterflies and the children playing in the campgrounds in poor neighborhoods and in rich neighborhoods. Use people walking alongside, 50 years married, hand by hand, and just smiling that they spend their lives together. It's the hospitals, the nurses, the doctors doing the best. Take a look around on airports that they function in a very amazing way that they don't know how. Now, things actually work. We humans, we've been building in the last post-World War II a good world. A good world that in America is full of imperfections and that we need to work together to fix them. Of course, but you don't fix them burning everything down. You fix them by coming together to the table, realizing that problems never will be solved by finger pointing. Problems will always be solved sitting down in the table and coming together in how we find common ground. That's the way we build good intent, good empathy, good policy, that then becomes good politics because it's on behalf of all Americans.
Of everyone.
That's the way we should be doing it. So that's why, in a way, I'm hopeful.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. your energy, your spirit may be hard, but your energy is great. Change the Recipe. The book's out now. It's hard not to get caught up in the rhythm and whimsy of Jose's mind. I never know quite where he's going to go next, but I'm never disappointed. At a time where finger-pointing and tribalism is on the rise, it's refreshing to hear how Jose still sees the best in people. He's upbeat about what humanity has the power to achieve if we work together to solve problems, yet his optimism isn't naive. He's pragmatic, leaning into boots-on-the-ground action. As we all try to navigate today's volatile climate, let's see if we can't inject at least a little bit of Jose's romance for life along the way. It couldn't hurt, and it might just help. I'm Bob Safian. Thanks for listening.
This is Zeb Farbman, co-founder and CEO of Lightrix, a technology company that creates AI-powered video models and tools.
Most of our research was along the border between computer graphics and image processing, and we thought that if we pair our expertise with this new platform, we will be able to create new tools and new creative experiences that no one did before.
But when the generative AI boom disrupted everything, Lightrix seized the moment with a new burst of innovation. They created LTX2, an open source AI model enabling its users to generate high quality video content, giving them full creative control from concept to delivery on one platform.
I think a lot of the values that we took from academia reflect how we are thinking about our models. We want them to be open. We want a collaborative environment. And we really, really care about efficiency. We always believe deep research is the key to unlocking a competitive advantage and building cool things. It's even more important during the age of AI.
Start creating today with LTX2 at ltx.studio.
Hey, folks, if you enjoyed our recent episode with my friend Matt Abrahams, the brilliant author and academic has his own podcast, Think Fast, Talk Smart. Twice a week, the Stanford lecturer sits down with experts to discuss their best advice to hone and develop your communication skills. Learn to stress less about public speaking, make more meaningful small talk, and much more. You'll always get science-backed strategies and actionable tips you can use right away. And Matt is just a fantastic guy. You're going to love having him in your ear. Listen to Think Fast, Talk Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt. My podcast, Search Engine, has a new two-part series for you. Of all the new technologies coming out of AI, the most transformative one might be driverless cars. They're already on the road in 10 American cities, and they're quickly coming to more. We tell the story of how we got here. The secret team at Google that spent 15 years building what might be the safest vehicle on the road. And we cover the fights brewing in blue cities, where unions and politicians are working to keep those cars off the streets. Listen to Search Engine wherever you get your podcasts.
Rapid Response is a Wait What original. I'm Bob Safian. Our executive producer is Eve Troe. Our producer is Alex Morris. Associate producer is Mashumaku Tonina. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli and Brian Pugh. Theme music is by Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Malad. For more, visit rapidresponseshow.com.